There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Your weekend home for all things sport.
This is The Grill on DubaiEye 103.8.
Live from Barasti.
Here's Tom Urquhart.
Into the final hour of The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on, at Barasti Beach, at DubaiEye 103.8 FM, at DubaiEye Sport. Do keep your thoughts coming through to us. Let's point you at the picture of what's going on live, first and foremost. Let's start with the football. Chris McCarthy's all over that for us.
Yeah, Etihad Stadium. We're into the final 15 minutes. And if you are an Aston Villa fan, I've not got good news for you, because it was 0-0 at half-time. And at that point, you thought, Villa, they're doing well. But as we know, against Manchester City, they're a bit like the All Blacks. You've got to perform for the full. In the rugby, it's 80 minutes. Against City, it's the full 90-plus. And, well, 21 seconds into the second half, Raheem Sterling has opened the floodgates somewhat. A second goal was scored. Kevin De Bruyne has been accredited with it. Ike Gundogan has added a third, and if all of that wasn't enough, we've just seen Sergio Aguero trot on to the field for the final 15 minutes. It's been a good day for City thus far. They will win this game. They will close the gap to Liverpool at the top of the table to 3 points. They've played a game more. Liverpool, of course, not in action until tomorrow afternoon, or tomorrow evening, should I say, against Tottenham at Anfield. City, it's been a good day. There's 13 minutes remaining. They lead by 3-0.
Ferrari's Sebastian Vettel has set the pace as Mercedes have struggled in second practice at the Mexican Grand Prix. That's taking place this weekend, so we'll have more details on that one for you. What's happening with the cricket, Bruni?
Well, it looks like Bermuda going down against Ireland, which is going to keep Ireland on top of Group B. They've now played 6 matches for 4 wins and 2 losses, but they're pretty comfortably going through to the next stage. The big game, though, is tonight. It's Namibia versus Singapore down at the Dubai International Cricket Stadium. Starts at 7:30. Now, the interesting thing here, Singapore on 4 points from 2 wins and 3 losses. Namibia on 6 points from 3 wins and 2 losses. So Namibia just in front, but it all goes down to run rate. So if Singapore have a good one tonight and they beat Namibia, they can go past Namibia, and that would mean Namibia would miss out on the knockout stages. So it's all on the line down there today. The teams that have already gone through, Papua New Guinea, as I said, the real surprise packet. Netherlands playing some good cricket. Scotland have had a couple of poor results, but they will make the knockout stages as well. Ireland, Oman, UAE, despite the off-field troubles, will go through. And also Canada are going through ahead of Hong Kong, which is a bit of a surprise in Group B.
Northampton have just kicked off against Worcester in the Gallagher English Premiership. Early kickoff over there. No points to report of in that. Three other games to look forward to from 6 o'clock this evening. Gloucester against Wasps, Quins against Bristol, and London Irish in action against Sales. There's also games over in the Guinness Pro 14 a little later in proceedings, but when it comes to rugby, there is one big story. England booking their place in the Rugby World Cup final next weekend with a very, very convincing win over New Zealand. England fans were in very good voice, not just down here at Barasti, but around the world, and more so than over in Japan, where tens of thousands have turned up to support the team of the chariot, and England were very quick to thank their fans after the game.
They really were to a man. Defensively, Salmon, what a game. As a seven, his partner in crime, Tom Curry, as much wanted. New Zealand attack, which led in all facets with a couple of attacking stats, just nullified. It were great. This is great to see. Lots and lots of England fans in this ground.
More reaction from Chris and Alex in a few moments' time, but let's get reaction from the managers. Let's hear from Eddie Jones, the victorious England coach.
Look, we're playing against a great team today. Steve Hance is a great coach, Kieran Reid's a great captain. We had to dig deep. Now, we knew we'd have to come off the line hard and keep taking away time and space from them. We managed to do that, cause a few errors, and we maybe had a few lucky bounces and got the result.
I mean, everyone talks a lot about attack, but you've got to have great defence to win these types of tournaments, don't you? And your team was fantastic in that area tonight.
Yeah, well, I think World Cup's always about defence, and you know, our best form of attack is our defence. We create opportunities for our defence to attack. But again, you know, I'd like to pay the greatest compliment to New Zealand. They've won 2 World Cups in a row. They've been a great team, so we had to dig really deep to beat them.
Another World Cup final for you, though. How do you feel?
Look, I'm excited for the boys. They've worked really hard to get where they are. And we've just got another week in the comp now, mate.
good luck for next week, eh?
Okay, thank you. Arigato, minasan.
Those are the thoughts of Eddie Jones. What about his opposite number, Steve Hansen?
Well, coach, a very tough time, obviously. Steve Hansen, do you think the first half is just on the back foot from the get-go?
Oh, look, firstly, I'd just like to congratulate England. I think they played a tremendous game of footy and on the day deserved to win the game. And, you know, you can't give them half a step because they'll take it. So, end of the day, that's what rugby's about. And well done to them.
Coach, I know you've still got another game next week. You've been involved with this team for 15 years, won 2 World Cups. I'll give you the platform to just say what you'd like to say for the people back home.
Yeah, look, I'm really proud of our team. They've done a tremendous job for their country and just on, you know, tonight we just weren't good enough. So we have to take that on the chin, and so does everybody back home and our fans. And, you know, all credit to England. But you saw the boys at the end. They're still trying their guts out, and that's all you can ask. So really proud of them. Yeah, cheers, and thanks to Japan for a wonderful, wonderful tournament. Appreciate it.
Bruni, I think it's fair to say that England's sports teams have been the bane of New Zealand's sports teams this year.
Well, yes, I mean, it would have been great for New Zealanders to come back after that incredible Cricket World Cup final. But, of course, that was a game where we thought, really, did the better team win in the end? It was a draw twice, really, but England got through on the boundary rule. But this one, I don't think there was any doubt. But I just want to just talk really quickly about how Eddie Jones has put together this back row team. Because the really interesting thing is he's got, really, three rejects as his assistant coaches. John Mitchell, of course, was a former All Black coach. He got booted out of there. He then went to the Western Force in Australia. He got booted out of there. He then went over to England, didn't have a wonderful record with Sale Sharks. He then went to United States for a little while, again, not so successful. And he was last at the Blue Bulls and the Bulls in South Africa when this came up. Now, that was because Paul Gustard, who had been the defence coach of England, he said, listen, I've had enough, and he went to go and be the head coach of Harlequins. So Eddie Jones, out of the blue, picked John Mitchell, and there was a lot of eyebrows raised. There was like, John Mitchell's going to come in as defence coach? Well, you know, because, I mean, you know, John's an interesting character, but, you know, he's come in and he's done a fantastic job. Scott Weismantle, another Australian who's his skills coach, has done an amazing job there. He was let go from the Waratahs, no longer required his services at the New South Wales Waratahs. So, you know, these are players that he's put together, and also Borthwick, who is, of course, his forwards coach. Again, you know, I mean, yes, a great player when he in his day, but has he got the great coaching record? So Eddie Jones has had faith in these people. He's had faith in Mitchell. He's had faith in Weismantle. He's had faith in Borthwick. And these guys have really delivered for him. And, you know, they talk about Eddie Jones. He gets, you know, he sends emails to them at 4 a.m. in the morning. And that is true. He does. He does get up at 4 a.m. in the morning and send people, you know, a bit of a raspberry on email. And also he gave them all this book about Japan that they all had to read, the harmony of Japan, I think, before they all went. So he's a very, very tough taskmaster. But obviously these three guys have responded to it really well. And they've got the best out of this group of players. So congratulations to the man management skill, the tactics, everything. He's got one up on Steve Hansen, who is a great rugby coach.
He's got his detractors, Eddie Jones, as we've seen, you know, with some of his decisions, some of the performances for England in the build-up to this Rugby World Cup as well. But I don't think you can take anything away from the man when it comes to big tournaments like the Rugby World Cup. He's got pedigree there.
He certainly does, Tom. You look back, 2003, okay, he was the Australian coach that was beaten by England in 2003. He was part of Jake White's coaching staff when South Africa beat England in 2007. We've said it on this show before, there are a lot of similarities between Eddie Jones and Jose Mourinho from a footballing standpoint. Doesn't win any popularity contests, but when it comes to the nitty-gritty, when it comes to tactically looking at a team and how to shut them down, you said it off-air at the start of the show, Alex, there is probably no one finer, or maybe it was you in actual fact, Tom, studying an opposition and finding a game plan. We saw it with the decision to start Slade, Henry Slade, against who was at the quarter-final success against... Who did England beat quarterfinals?
Australia.
Australia, of course. And then what does he do? He brings Ford back in. One or two in the media questioning it. Not a jot. Yeah. George Ford was absolutely impeccable today. And Eddie Jones deserves all the credit that's coming his way. There's something about the World Cup that brings out the best in him. The four-year cycle allows him to analyse, self-analyse as well, and come up with a blueprint that more often than not leads to results.
Yeah, because what was it? Was it 2003 he was... Aussie captain.
He was the Aussie coach, and he got the boot from Australia in about 2005 because he had a bad year, and they said, goodbye, Eddie Jones, we don't need you anymore. He had a dreadful year at the Queensland Reds, where one year where they lost like 12 games in Super 14, and he got booted out of there, and then he went to Japan, and he slowly managed to rebuild his career through Harlequins. But remember, it's even a miracle that Jones is coaching England, because he, of course, after Japan finished the World Cup, he took up the job as the Stormers. The manager of, sorry, the coach of the Western Stormers in Super Rugby. And next time you see Bob Skinstad, have a little, just mention the two words Eddie Jones to Bob Skinstad, and you'll get a very, very interesting response from Bob Skinstad, because he's got some stories about Eddie's brief time down in Cape Town where he is not well loved or well liked. But you know, the thing about Eddie is he's put it all behind him, and that's what I really admire about the guy. And when it's all said and done, he's come up there, he's come up trumps today, and winners are grinners. And listen, I thought Eddie was really humble in victory today, which I thought was great, because he could have really put the boot in. Mm. Because there was an interesting moment today, earlier in this week, at a press conference where he asked the media, he says, do any of you think we can beat the All Blacks? No hands at all. Yeah. Not one single hand for and. No one believed they could do it. He believed he could. His team believed they could, and they've done it.
Mm. He is a master tactician, one can say. Back on that 2003, because obviously, you know, he was the man behind Australia who beat New Zealand in that semi-final.
They did, and played a brilliant match in that
game.
And
that great piece of George Gregan sledging, wasn't it? Four more years, boys.
Yeah.
Was that year?
It was. And also Stirling Mortlock taking an amazing intercept and running away quite early in the game. But again, he played a very, very smart match that year. And that was a game where they'd lost the Bledisloe Cup a couple of months earlier. New Zealand had absolutely thrashed them at the same venue by 25 points. So everybody absolutely tipping the All Blacks, but he believed he could find a way to do it. And I think the way they've done, he's obviously determined that physically they've got the edge, but I think he thought, we can beat them at the breakdown. And if you can disrupt the All Black at the breakdown, if they don't get the clean ball, Underhill and Curry stop them getting the clean ball, and the All Blacks, as you know, as Mark Archer was saying, they became a bit of a rabble. But this is the interesting thing. If you look back to the All Blacks game last week, after five or six phases last week, they were clueless. They were absolutely clueless. It was really interesting watching them, because they didn't get a breakthrough or make some ground after 5-6. They didn't get the momentum. They just stopped and they kicked the ball away. Yeah. So that was obviously something Eddie Jones put on. He said, okay, if we can stop them, if we can hold them for a little while, they ain't got nothing. You know, they're a three or four or five phase team, which is unusual for the All Blacks, not to be able to keep mounting attacks. So I think he saw those. He focused in on those little details. He came up with a game plan, as Chris said, and he delivered it beautifully.
Let's hear from the captains now. Let's start with the victorious captain, Owen Farrell.
Victorious England captain, Owen Farrell. Now just tell me, Kip, right from the get-go in the haka, the boys up for it, weren't they?
Yeah, look, it's a big game. It's a World Cup semi-final against the All Blacks. It's as big a game as you can get in this stage. And, you know, we felt like we prepared well. And we started the game well.
Talk about starting the game. The score within 2 minutes must give you huge confidence.
Yeah, look, all these big games, teams get physical. They go at each other from the off. And we knew that was going to come our way, and we wanted to make sure that we were playing that game too.
One thing we saw tonight was evident. Your front rowers in particular taking the ball to the line and giving those late balls, showing a bit of skill tonight.
Yeah, look, we've got a number of ways of playing. We've got a big, powerful pack, but as you said, they can use the ball as well. We want to play to space. And tonight we did that well.
Rugby World Cup Final, Japan 2019, how's that sound?
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. It's brilliant to get there. It's brilliant to be a part of, obviously. And we'll enjoy this win first. But we'll make sure we prepare well now.
What about the defeated captain, Kieran Reid?
Reid, All Black captain. I know, very disappointed, obviously. Do you feel like the first 40 minutes you just couldn't get into your game plan?
Yeah. I guess it's pretty hard to put into some words, you know, what it means. But yeah, you know, you got to give the English the credit. Came out, started extremely well. And yeah, we just probably just couldn't get into that game.
It seems like their speed of ball really stressed your defence. What do you think? You missed so many tackles there, because there's a lot of missed tackles. Normally, we don't see that from an All Black squad.
Yeah, look, you know, I think we'll look at that game and there'll be so many what-ifs and things that we could have done a lot better. You know, a stage like this, you can't afford it, and it cost us.
You're a fan of the third, fourth playoff? I mean, it's a bit of a shame for people like Kieran Reid, people like Steve Hansen, that they've got to come back next Friday for that one final game.
Well, I was the media liaison for the Springboks in 1999, and we, of course, had to play in that match. We had to play New Zealand in that match, and because we got beaten by Australia by the Steve Larkham drop goal at Twickenham the week beforehand. And I tell you, it was very mixed feelings. The All Blacks were very, very flat because they'd had the surprise loss to France. So they came into the game very flat. But our boys wanted to win. You know, they wanted to get a win against the All Blacks. They wanted to finish third. They wanted to get that bronze medal. And in the end, it comes down to who wants it the most. So it'll be interesting to see what Steve Hansen does next week. He really might swap the squad around and give some other players a go. But there's two other points I really want to make about the game today too. The first scrum came after 19 minutes. And, you know, the great thing about this, I mean, there were so many people around the world watching this game. It was a great game of rugby because we had two teams who wanted to play. They didn't, when the ball got dropped, they picked it up and they ran. And then they dropped it and the other team picked it up and ran. No one wanted to stop the play. No one wanted to kill the game. Everyone wanted to keep going. It was such an exciting, such a thrilling game. So credit to both teams then. And listen, I've criticised him in the past, but I thought he was fantastic today. I think he's been fantastic through this tournament. Nigel Owens, I thought, was brilliant today. I thought he was brilliant. He was so calm. A lot of the referees at this tournament have got a bit emotional. And some results and some decisions of, like, Wayne Barnes, I thought, had a very poor semi-quarter final last week because I thought he got a bit emotional. But Nigel has been very calm. Usually goes a little bit to the All Blacks, but today I thought he was straight down the line for both sides. He was very calm. He held it all together, held all the big moments. I think it's a great thing for Nigel Owens. And, of course, if Wales win tomorrow, he won't referee the final, but it would be a great fitting tribute to Nigel to finish his career, international career or Rugby World Cup career, by going out and refereeing the grand final. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, hear, hear. On that front, of course, the Welsh fans listening will probably be agreeing with that, but they'll want their team to be in said final. And that semi-final tomorrow is going to be an absolute belter as well. Springboks against the Welsh could be an old Northern Hemisphere final. Not many people backing that
look
at the start of the tournament.
Yeah. In fact, we will look ahead to that semi-final in just a few moments' time with a former international.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
A final whistle in the early in the Premier League has just gone. Who got the points?
It was Manchester City. No surprise here, Tom. We're seeing pictures of Raheem Sterling. He got the ball rolling 21 seconds into the second half. He opened the scoring, Kevin De Bruyne. Then a little fortuitously added the second from a cross, really, that bypassed everyone. Ended up in the far post. Tom Heaton, no chance. Ilkay Gündoğan added a little extra, little kind of shoe polish to proceedings. And then what did we see in those closing stages? Well, we saw a second yellow card for Fernandinho. So a little bit of a damp squib ending for Man City. That being said, they've picked up the 3 points, they've kept a clean sheet, they've scored three more goals, and they've closed the gap to the top of the table to Liverpool to 3 points. Of course, Liverpool have the game in hand. They'll take on Tottenham tomorrow afternoon. But City are up and running. They've won at the Etihad against Aston Villa. City 3, Villa 0.
Lecce against Juventus is an early kickoff in Italian Serie A. 70 minutes on the clock there, no goals to report as yet. Inter against Parma, Genoa against Brescia a little later on. Three games also to look forward to in Spain later. Leganes take you on Mallorca, Real Valladolid at home to Eibar, and then it's all about the Athletics later on. 11 p.m. this evening, Atletico Madrid taking off, on Athletic Bilbao. So that one's off at 11.
Yeah, good game that. Looking forward to that one. A little later this evening, Atletico Madrid have found goals hard to come by, but I will be tuned in for that one, I'm sure, later this evening. And you forgot the big one, Tom. The big one. I don't know what derby this is. You're probably, it's kind of your neck of the wood. Exeter City against Plymouth Argyle, League 2, 62 minutes on the clock. I can tell you, for any Exeter City fans out there, your boys lead 2-0.
Look at that. We feel free to keep your thoughts coming through with regards to other stories. Greece's Stefanos Tsitsipas fights back to beat Filip Krajinovic and set up a semi-final with Roger Federer. That's at the Swiss Indoors over in Basel. It's not very often that Roger loses in Switzerland, is it?
It isn't, but he's going up against Stefanos Tsitsipas, who is a heck of a player and a man who beat him, didn't he, not so long ago over in Shanghai. I think it, no, was that Zverev? Maybe it was Zverev in actual fact that beat Federer, come to think of it. But Tsitsipas is no doubt about it. He is the future of men's tennis, and that will be a tasty semi-final down in Bale, the hometown, of course, of the legendary Roger Federer.
Let's go back to the rugby, because obviously England have put their place into the semi-final. You spoke to former England second rower Simon Shaw.
Yes, 71 caps did Shaw. See, I didn't realise this until speaking to him. Member of the 2003 World Cup winning side, didn't play, got a medal, doesn't really feel that he deserved it, was a member of the side that got to the final in 2007. Spoke to him at length, in actual fact. Tommy's going to be over here doing an event, the DHL Swing Against Cancer Golf Series Grand Final. It's twinned with the Mike Clark Golf Day on November the 7th, the Thursday, down at the Jumeirah Golf Estates. Caught up with him. We've already seen England beat New Zealand. I should point out, and he'll thank me for saying this, he did back England to beat the All Blacks. Here's his thoughts, though, ahead of the second semi-final tomorrow. It's Wales against South Africa, and this is what Shaw's here to say.
If you look at the form, Wales, I think, have beaten the South African side now. It's either 4 out of 5 times or 5 out of 6, it may even be. So they actually got form against South Africa. And whilst what you said is right to a certain degree, you know, South Africa took quite a while to dampen the spirits of the Japanese. It was never in doubt that the Japanese were going to give it all and right to the end, you know, the last minute. But I just felt that they didn't show that strength early enough in the game. I felt that it wasn't as impressive as a performance as the scoreline suggested. And I think the difference with this Wales side, well, not the difference, they've been like this for a long time under Warren Gatland. They've been just a really, really, really tough side to beat. And in World Cups, it doesn't matter how you win, as long as you win. They don't mind. They're not bothered winning ugly, if that's what it takes. So, yes, they'll need to have a better performance, certainly a more attacking-driven performance than they did against the French. The French showed up some weaknesses in defence, so the South Africans will be rubbing their hands in that regard. But I still see the Welsh as having a slight edge on this fixture just because of their form.
South Africa taking on Wales. Let's get Bruni's thoughts on this one. You think South Africa is going to be too strong?
Simon Shaw, great player, but he's in dreamland here. I just don't give. I mean, Wales have had so many injuries. Gareth Anscombe, of course, never even came to the tournament. Liam Williams is gone now. Josh Navidi is also gone now. I mean, Dan Bigger, he had 2 really bad head knocks earlier in the tournament. He won more tomorrow, and he goes off with 10 minutes. You know, and then Reece Patchett's got to come on and win the game for them. I think they'll really struggle. I think the box are really up for it. The box, that was a big challenge, Japan, last week. That was a big challenge. They had the whole of Japan against them. They had the whole of the world against them. Everybody wanted Japan to go through to the semi-finals. It would have been such a magical thing to happen. But I thought South Africa did really well. They're big and strong. They're all coming into good form at the moment. The big problem is their kicking game, which has been incredibly poor. I mean, Fafter, I was watching the game with a massive load of Bok fans last week, and every time Faf got the ball and he kicks up his heels and points his toe up into the air, and that's, you know, he's going to kick, he's going to box kick. And every time he did that, every Bok fan started to groan because he puts these terrible box kicks up, which no one goes for. None of the Bok players can actually catch. So, I mean, maybe if Josh Adams is on his game, maybe if George North is on his game, and it's going to be the little man at the back there. So, I mean, if they can play well and take their catches, then maybe they've got a chance, Wales. But I think South Africa just too big and too strong for them tomorrow.
Makes a good case, so you do there, Bruni. I'm not going to disagree with that. I think Wales, certainly, they talk about playing ugly, don't they? And against the French, I actually thought it was Wales who were running out of ideas. They got a bit lucky.
They were very lucky. The Vahamina send-off, which is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen, almost as ridiculous as Jaco Pieper posing for that ridiculous photo, which he got stood down for, which I can completely understand. But Vahamina, I mean, I don't know if people watched that game last week with France and Wales, but France were well on top. Yeah. They were going to win that game quite comfortably. They were leading by 6 points. They had a maul down on the Wales line. They were rolling towards the try line. It was either going to be a 5-yard scrum or it was going to be a try. Vahamina, for some unbelievable senseless reason, just hit Wainwright in the head with an absolute stone-cold elbow, and he got a direct red card. It changed the game completely. And then, of course, very, very French, very dramatic at the end of the match. He then announced his retirement in the dressing room after the game, straight afterwards, with tears flowing. So it's just very, very sad for France, because I thought France played really, really well, and I thought they deserved to go through. So I think Wales were really lucky. A lot of their key players were very quiet. I know Jonathan Davies is back. Maybe that might make a difference. Maybe Lee Halfpenny, you know, will have a big impact at fullback, but I think the players they've got out, I think they're carrying a few injuries, I think they're a little bit tired, and they've just gone a bit, I think they've gone around too far, so I think the box will win this quite comfortably.
1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon because of the clocks going back in the UK, so it's 1 o'clock kickoff tomorrow afternoon, not the midday as we've seen today. A couple of golf lines for you, the Portugal Masters ongoing over in, yeah, you guessed it, Portugal, where Justin Walters, in fact, it's a South Africa 1-2 after into the third round over there in Portugal. Justin Walters and Dean Burmester at the top of the leaderboard at 12 under and 11 under respectively. Young Hong Wang of South Korea is also at 11 under, and he's joined by Oliver Fisher of England. Matt Wallace also in the hunt at 10 under, along with another South African, Brandon Stone. Meanwhile, over in Japan at the intriguingly named Zozo Championship in Japan, familiar face and name at the top of that leaderboard, Tiger Woods has taken a two-shot lead at the halfway stage.
Absolutely, Tom. A 64 backed up with another 64. So two six-unders has taken him to 12 under par. That is a two-shot lead over his compatriot, Gary Woodland. And it's even more remarkable when you consider he went bogey, bogey, bogey in his opening round. So in the end, he was 9 under par for his final 15 holes on that opening round. His best ever opening round, would you believe, as well, from Tiger Woods. He's backed it up with another 64. He leads by two. You've got Keegan Bradley, another American, a further two shots back, with a home favourite, Hideki Matsuyama, also an 8 under. And of course, history beckons for Tiger Woods, because if he is to go on and win the Zozo Championship, he equals Sam Snead's record of 82 PGA Championship successes. So that is a remarkable PGA Tour, successes. So for Tiger Woods, history is there, and that was just round off. Start of the year with the Masters success, end the year by levelling up with Sam Snead. 2019, a year to remember.
I don't know if you had an opportunity to see any of the pictures coming through from the Zozo Champion. It was a bizarre tournament, because obviously the weather that Archie was just talking about there, the torrential rain and the near cyclone conditions, they didn't allow any fans onto the course.
And no golf yesterday either.
So no golf yesterday.
Yesterday, so the finish completed round two today. It must be, and again, forgive me on this, unless they're playing two rounds on Sunday, it may well be a Monday finish. In fact, it will be, because of Friday's play postponed. So the tournament will finish on Monday. So we're only at the halfway stage. We often talk about Saturday being moving day. Not so. We're halfway through. There's work still to be done for Tiger. He's put himself in a wonderful position. He's not only closing in on the title with two rounds still to go, but then history with Sam Snead's all-time record.
We have got three games kicking off at 6 o'clock in the Premier League. We'll give you team news next.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Yeah, one of the big talkers is the fact that England made it through to their first Rugby World Cup final for the last 12 years. Wales against South Africa tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Adult, thank you very much indeed, Sam, for your text message a little earlier on today. Nigel Owens having a masterclass today, said Sam. When that is the case, the All Blacks just don't like it when nothing is going their way. If a referee referees a game, the insinuation there from Sam, then the All Blacks just don't like it. Is that fair?
Listen, I think that's a bit tough. I think Nigel does usually actually go for the team that's playing the most attractive rugby, which is often the All Blacks. So when you watch an All Black game, and remember, of course, he's had some very big decisions. There was the famous game in Dublin when he gave the conversion again to be re-kicked, and that was landed from the sideline, and the All Blacks won that test match. They beat Ireland. So he's had a lot of decisions in the past which have been a bit towards the All Blacks. So I thought he did have a great game. But listen, the All Blacks play positive rugby, and they tried to play positively today. England played the more positive rugby, or played it better, and won. And I thought, you know, as I said, it was a great advertisement for the game. Very well refereed.
Three games kicking off at 6 o'clock in the Premier League. Four games kicking off in the Scottish Premiership as well. Hibs against Ross County, Kilmarnock against St Mirren, Livingston against Hearts, and Johnson against Hamilton. What about the Premier League, though? We got some team news filtering through for us, which Chris McCarty is going through with a fine tooth comb at present. Brighton against Everton. It's Everton down on the south coast.
It certainly is. The Amex Arena for Everton this afternoon. Graham Potter's Brighton and Hove Albion, of course. I can tell you no real surprise with the starting 11 named by GP. Matthew Ryan starts in goal. One of the very best goalkeepers in the league. It's a back four. Martin Montoya, the former Barca man at right back. Left back, the big tall figure of Dan Byrne. The two centre halves, Lewis Dunk, and I'll stake my reputation on this, I think he's the best centre half outside the big six, maybe even the big four, Lewis Dunk, alongside their big summer recruit, Adam Webster from Bristol City. Midfield four, he's got a good mix in there. Pascal Gross on the right. He's got Stephen Alzate on the left, a youngster he's put an awful lot of faith in this season. Davy Proper, the Dutchman, alongside Dale Stevens, the real kind of terrier, if you will, the man that loves getting his foot on the ball, making things happen for Brighton. And then he's gone for the two diminutives, perpetual motion up front. Neil Maupay, the Frenchman who they signed for big money from Brentford in the summer, and Aaron Connolly, the young Irishman who, of course, catapulted himself into the reckoning with that two-goal salvo against Tottenham a few weeks back. As for Everton, Jordan Pickford, the England number one, starts in goal. Jibril Sidibe, the right-back on loan from AS Monaco, and right-back Lucas Digne, the other Frenchman, is the opposite flank at left-back. Mason Holgate, Michael Keane, the centre-halves, Andre Gomes and Tom Davies, the central midfield partnership. Theo Walcott on the right, little Brazilian magician Bernard on the left, Alex Iwobi given freedom in behind the lone frontman. No, it isn't Moise Keane, it is Richarlison who will lead the line for Everton. Marco Silva is a man under pressure. Big game this, I'm looking forward to it. Brighton against Everton, kick off in that one, of course, in a little under 25 minutes.
Bournemouth are making the journey up to Watford, not too far for them to go, but a couple of changes for both managers, Watford, Bournemouth.
Yeah, let's start with Watford news this week. The Danny Welbeck has suffered a very serious hamstring injury that means that he will face a lengthy spell on the sidelines. Kiki Sanchez-Flores hasn't had, I guess, the... Well, hasn't had the reaction from his players that I think he would have been expecting in his second stint in charge at Vicarage Road. He's went for a back three this afternoon. Ben Foster starts in goals. That back three of Craig Dawson, Craig Cathcart and Christian Cabasele, the Belgian. The two wing-backs, Adam Messina at left wing-back, Daryl Yanmat at right wing-back. Then comes Tom Cleverley, Nathaniel Chalaba and Abdoulaye Doucouré. Gerard Deulofeu is given licence to roam alongside Roberto Pereira. So no Andre Gray, no Danny Welbeck, no Troy Deeney, which means it's a bit of a hodgepodge strike force, that for Watford. As for Bournemouth, well, it's Aaron Ramsdale in goals. Adam Smith in at right-back, Diego Rico at left-back, Nathan Akai alongside the skipper, Steve Cook. It's then Arnoud Danjuma right-wing, Ryan Fraser left-wing, the two big hulking figures of Philip Billing and Jefferson Lerma, and then he's got the two danger men, Callum Wilson, an England international, alongside the Norwegian Joshua King. I'm expecting plenty of goals in this one, truth be told, Tom. It's Watford against Bournemouth.
And also, what about history in the third game? West Ham against Sheffield United. I'll take you back to 2006-2007, if I can, Chris McCarty. Last game of that Premier League season. Do you remember it?
I remember it well.
OK, so why on earth is Tom referencing that? Carlos Tevez.
Last minute goal. At Old Trafford. West Ham under Alan Carbishley. They beat Manchester United 1-0. Final day of the season, which condemned Sheffield United.
Kept us up.
Kept you guys up. Sent Sheffield United down, and as we know, the Kia Jarabshirin deal to bring Mascherano and Tevez to West Ham was shrouded in a little bit of controversy. It shouldn't have gone ahead because of third-party ownership. It went to the High Court. What happened in the end? Sheffield United, I think we're given £25 million.
They were, yeah.
If memory serves me correct. Of course, they weren't reinstated. They've had to do it the hard way to get back into the Premier League. So no love lost between these two teams. And I can tell you that West Ham this afternoon, Roberto starts in goals. The back four, Pablo Zabaleta, Issa Diop, Fabian Balbuena and Aaron Cresswell. Midfield two, more to the point, Declan Rice and Mark Noble. It's then an attacking triumvirate. Andrei Yaramolenko, Robert Snodgrass, the Scot and Felipe Anderson. And it's the big French. Sebastian Haller leading the line. As for Sheffield United, no surprises that Chris Wilder has gone for his trusted and tried and tested 3-5-2. Dean Henderson in goals, Chris Basham, John Egan and Jack O'Connell. The two wing-backs, George Baldock and Enda Stevens. You know exactly what you're getting from both of those. John Fleck, Oliver Norwood and John Lundstrom across the midfield. And then up front, he's gone for the big hulking veteran in David McGoldrick. And then it's the wiry Callum Robinson alongside the Republic of Ireland international. Don't think there'll be many goals in this. You boys have been struggling. It wouldn't surprise me if Sheffield United get a bit of revenge this afternoon.
Good to see Snodders back, because I think he brings a sort of different dimension to the West Ham team. But they have been... I'll tell you who I think they're really lacking at the moment. They were awful last time out against Everton. Absolutely abysmal. Really, really bad game. Really difficult to watch as well as a West Ham fan. I think they're missing Fabianski. I think they're missing the reliance that he sort of brought to the bat. They've leaked goals always, which is a shame because they've got some great defence. But I think they're sort of leading. They're missing that leadership at the back.
Yeah,
of the
Fabianski's a wonderful short stopper. I think that's the key. I've watched Fabianski down certainly at Swansea, at Arsenal before. He's capable of a rick, but what he is, and a side like West Ham, you do leak chances, but he's capable. He's a wonderful short stopper, is the poll. And I take the point, he's missing 3 months. So Roberto, the Spaniard who came in the summer, he is having to deputise, and you're absolutely right, that's maybe just upset the kind of back line for West Ham a little bit. They're trying to get up communication, etc. And simply put, Roberto is not a good short stopper. ever as Lukas Fabianski.
It must be very, very frustrating being a West Ham fan, really, because at the start of the year, you guys looked like you were going to have a really, really good season. And again, it's already trailing off, and you look like you're going to be stuck in mid-table again.
Well, it's really interesting because, yeah, I mean, I was getting a bit of a nosebleed earlier on in the season when we were up to sort of fifth or something, and then we've had this bad run of results recently. However, you look at that table, and you look at the sort of the mid-table mediocrity at the moment. We're down to 12th at the moment, but a win today and results going our way could get us back up into the top six again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what are you? You're on 12 points, so a win today, in actual fact, you go fifth. Arsenal don't play until tomorrow, so that just shows you in and around there. You look at Arsenal on 15 points, Palace in sixth and 14, then Tottenham, Burnley, Sheffield United, Bournemouth and West Ham all on 12. You're 2 points ahead of Manchester United, for goodness sake, Tom. So, yes, you've got some wonderful players. It's typical of West Ham, though. On your day, you're as good as anyone. When you're not quite at it, you can throw in these absolute dollies of performances. And that's just kind of where West Ham are. Big fan of Mark Noble. Big fan of Declan Rice. I know Noble, perhaps a little limited. He's not the paciest and isn't the quickest around that midfield. Declan Rice I'm a big fan of. Felipe Anderson I'm a fan of. Cresswell, Haller. There are players in that West Ham team that I think...
Yarmolenko's come good.
Yarmolenko's finally come good. Ryan Fredericks, the fullback. It's just the West Ham thing that you have these talented individuals, and Pellegrini's job is to kind of knead them in and make sure there's a cohesive unit there.
One thing we have to talk about is last night. We're talking Premier League at the moment, and we haven't addressed what was... I got shown this result a little earlier on. I didn't realise there was Friday football on last night, I'll be completely honest. And my son showed me this result a little bit earlier on, and I thought he was taking the mick. I literally thought he was taking the mick.
He's playing FIFA.
Yeah. Okay, enough of the computer games. Let's talk about the actual game from yesterday. 9-0 is a story in its own right. But 9-0 at Southampton.
Yeah, Leicester City put on an absolute clinic last night. It was a masterclass of a masterclass in a number of ways. A masterclass of how to play against 10 men, first and foremost. Because Southampton, if you missed this match, Southampton early on in this game, Ryan Bertrand, the former Chelsea fullback, a terrible tackle on Iosu Perez. Leicester actually scored. The referee quite rightly allowed play to continue. They scored through Ben Chilwell. The incident was then reviewed, straight red for Bertrand. But Brendan Rodgers and his ability as a football manager. Leicester played it absolutely picture-perfect last night. They obliterated Southampton. It was as good as a performance against 10 men as you're likely to see. Southampton, don't get me wrong, were wretched. And I'm a big fan of Ralf Husenhattl. What a job he did at RB Leipzig. But he looks a little bit now out of his depth somewhat. He's not got the players. The formation doesn't suit the players he's got at his disposal. And Leicester were clinical last night. A hat-trick for Perez. A hat-trick for Jamie Vardy. It was Ben Chilwell got on the score sheet. Yuri Tielemans got on the score sheet. And James Maddison scored an absolute belter of a 25-yard free kick. It was 9-0. It could have been 11 or 12. And that does equal the Premier League record for the biggest win in Premier League history. Manchester United had that. I think it was March 4th. 1995, if memory serves me correct. Andy Cole scored five that day in a 9-0 win over Ipswich Town. Fast forward, what is it? Best part of 23 years, more than that, 24 years in actual fact, and you've seen a same scoreline, albeit Leicester on the road. Not good.
It's very, very surprising this, because we would have thought that the Premier League was going to be quite tight this year. And when you look at the table, it is extremely tight, but we've had two huge blowouts now. We had City winning 7-0. And we were here when that game started. It was, 4-0 after 9 minutes or something.
Ridiculous.
And now you've got this one, which is, it's a shocking result for Southampton. You must think of a Southampton fan sitting there, as the club's gone pretty well in the last few years, just not absolutely able to believe your eyes.
There were 3-0 down. There were a man down. There were 3-0 down after 19 minutes. A lot of fans left. And I just want to say, and they won't be listening, but for the fans, it was pouring rain down on the South Coast last night as well. For the fans that stuck around, well done you. Because your side has been absolutely humiliated and will be the talk of the town for the next few days. They've sunk into the bottom three, have Southampton. And I will not be surprised if Ralf Husenhattl goes in the coming days, in coming weeks. If
Southampton, it's one result.
Yeah, Tom, but if Southampton, it's now, what is it, one win in ten? Two wins in ten, sorry. Mm. Two wins in ten. And if Southampton are not doing their due diligence and asking around, then they're doing something wrong.
A lot of focus on him at the moment. He's taken 100% responsibility and apologised for the fans, apologised to the club, etc. Penny, for your thoughts on his opposing number yesterday, though. Brendan Rodgers, the job he's done at Leicester.
Yeah, I mean, he is. I think, who was it, Jamie Carragher said last night on Sky Sports, the host broadcaster over in the UK, that he's the best British manager. He you couldn't think of a better British manager. And I tend to agree with it. Listen, I'm not jumping on a bandwagon. Anyone that's listened to the show for a number of years, I am one of Brendan Rodgers' biggest fans. I think, genuinely, I don't think he gets enough credit. Alex is laughing now.
He would be as a Manchester United fan.
He doesn't get enough credit. You're perhaps in that school of thought that thinks that Suarez and Sterling and Gerrard carried him. That's utter nonsense. Sterling was 17. Brendan Rodgers created a space for him. His ability as a football coach allowed Luis Suarez to flourish in the position and in the way that he played the football game. Closest manager still today, other than last season, to go and win a title. Brendan Rodgers is not revered at Liverpool. Rafa Benitez is. Brendan Rodgers got them closer than Rafa Benitez did to a Premier League title. He went up to Celtic. People will tell you it's an easy league. You don't win a treble. You don't win a second successive treble. You just don't do it. No one's done it. Brendan Rodgers went up there and has dominated. He's come down and he's built a side now in Leicester City that Claudio Ranieri, 4 years ago, the most extraordinary footballing story ever told. Right now, though, with this Leicester City side, they are, as things stand, an absolute shoo-in for top four.
I think the thing about Brendan Rodgers, he's a good front runner. But when the pressure gets on, as it did at Liverpool when things started to go awry, he really did crack under pressure. But also, that's a number of years ago. He's grown. He's a little bit older, a little bit wiser, a little bit more mature, and maybe he's a better manager now than he was when he left Liverpool. And I mean, I'll never forget, I was there at the Liverpool toured Australia about 4 or 5 years ago after Brendan Rodgers. He had a very, very bad result at Stoke at the end of one season.
Yeah, he did.
They lost 5-1 or 6-1. And Emre Can gave away a goal. It looked like he wanted to just get rid of Rodgers. But they kept him, and Rodgers was like a broken man on that tour. But slowly he got stronger. And of course, he didn't last much longer at Liverpool after that. He went to Celtic and did a very good job in maybe not so challenging conditions, but he did the job that he had to do. And now he's come back. He's stronger. He's wiser. He's a little bit more mature. And who knows how far he can go. But the thing is, I would ask to you, very good manager in the Premier League, Premier League experience, do Manchester United start looking that way?
To Brendan, no. As much, honestly, sitting here, I'd take Brendan over Ole Gunnar Solskjaer any day of the week. Truth be told, you look at Brendan's CV, he improves players. Raheem Sterling, if he was sat here right now, yes, he's going to eulogise about Pep Guardiola, but I can guarantee in your life, he would say, Brendan gave him my start, and Brendan actually instilled a lot of the qualities that Pep has evolved.
And then he left.
And you're absolutely right to point that out. The second season, lost his way. Mario Balotelli was a poor recruit.
Oh, absolutely.
But where he lost Liverpool, where he lost the management was at the Bernabeu. He stuck Steven Gerrard on the bench,
yes, 100%,
in that Champions League match. That was the wrong decision. He's admitted since he got it wrong. He thought Liverpool fans wanted to win the league more than the Champions League. He got that wrong. He would admit to that. He improves players, does Brendan. I think if Unai Emery goes, I think Arsenal will be knocking on Leicester's door. If Mauricio Pochettino goes, forget Eddie Howe for a second. He's been given an awful lot of money at Bournemouth, and what have they really done? Not much. Brendan Rodgers, for me, Arsenal and Spurs, the Liverpool connection will probably ensure that he doesn't get the Man U job. He's good enough for it, though. Make no mistake about that. He's a top coach, is Brendan. He's done a great job, and long may it continue for Leicester. And I see them right now as finishing in the top four.
Your thoughts, please, do text them through to us on 4001. Five games have kicked off in the German Bundesliga. No surprise that Bayern Munich have taken an early lead against Union Berlin. 60 minutes on the clock, it's 1-0 to Bayern. And I can tell you, it's still goalless between Pennekuik Athletic and Stenhouse Muir. Where on earth is Pennekuik?
That's a good question, Tom. I don't even know where
Pennekuik. P-E-N-I-C-U-I-K.
Let me see this.
Athletic.
Let me see this.
Pennekuik Athletic. Second round of the Scottish Cup ongoing at the moment.
That is incredible. Even for me, Tom, I got to Google that. Pennekuik Athletic.
If I can just jump in here quickly with a Brendan Rodgers story. He came out here to Dubai with Celtic about a couple of years ago.
Yeah, every year he's been out.
And we were lucky. I was lucky enough to be in a sort of a media little scrum with him. He likes his chats, Brendan. He likes to get all the media around and have a little bit of a chat and a bit of a chin wag. And we were talking about when Liverpool went so close that year, and I asked him about if Jordan Henderson doesn't get sent off against Manchester City, do Liverpool win the league? And he thought that they did. So he was still thinking very, very much about that, and was still sitting very, very close to him. But, you know, as you say, he did a great job in getting Liverpool so close, and Liverpool have just been very, very lucky to get such a wonderful manager in Jurgen Klopp, who's done an amazing job for the club and for the team.
You're being too kind, Alex. Forget Jordan Henderson being sent off. If Steven Gerrard, your skipper, your leader, your legend, if he doesn't slip, that's the one, my man. Nothing to do with Brendan. He puts them out there. Jose did a number that day. Listen, take nothing away from Chelsea that day. But Steven Gerrard, it was poetic as a United fan. Absolutely poetic. But Brendan, I'm
going to hit him with my microphone. Liverpool fans out there, I will hit him with my microphone now, I promise you.
And I've looked up Penny
New
Couic.
New dad and all that.
I'll move it on. I've looked up Penny Couic, and it's a town in a former borough in Midlothian, Scotland. It lies, Tom, on the west bank of the River North Esk. Beautiful part of the world.
Part of the world. Let's see how they go against Stenhouse Muir. 4-0-0-1, if you want to have your say, we're going to wrap things up down here at the Grill, live from Brest, where the game is always on next.
You're listening to The Grill. More of the biggest sports stories now
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You are listening to The Grill. We're live here on Dubai Eye 103.8, but only live for the next few minutes. There is cricket ongoing here in the UAE at present, the ICC World T20 qualifiers. Two results for you. Ireland have smashed Nigeria by 8 wickets, and Netherlands have annihilated Bermuda by 92 runs. They are convincing victories in the T20 format. One more game to come a little later on. Namibia taking on Singapore. It's down at the Dubai International Cricket Stadium. Singapore, I've been impressed by them. They beat Scotland last weekend. I went down to watch that one at the ICC Cricket Academy. And some interesting characters lining up for Singapore, including Tim David. Now, that's not the most Singaporean of names that I've ever heard, but an interesting backstory.
I'm Tim David. I'm a top order batsman and I also bowl off spin. I was born in Singapore, so my first, I guess, experience with playing cricket was in the backyard in Singapore for the first couple of years. Moved back to Australia when I was very young, and I've lived my whole life in Australia pretty much. But to be able to come over to Singapore and, I guess, have more exposure to game time, different experiences, and being able to impart some of my experiences and knowledge on the guys has been really enjoyable so far.
When a superstar comes into your team, you're like, oh, what's going to happen? But actually, no, he's blended in really well. He's really absorbed the Singaporean culture, for that matter, and the team culture. And it's just it's a pleasure to be around from the bottom of my heart. He's just a very nice person to talk to.
Everyone's very accepting of each other. It's been really fun, and I'm lucky the boys are embraced me, really. Everyone's like a good friend now. It makes it easy when they're good friends you get to play with. Makes it a lot more fun. We've got a good mix in our team, a bit of a melting pot, which Singapore is, and I guess that's really exciting. It keeps it fresh for me.
Adakin.
Yanakin.
Indayano.
Romba Puritiriki.
No, well, mate, you picked the hardest words,
guy. It means I like this place very much.
It's really pleasing that the guys, you know, they like having me in their team. That's, for me, that's the most important thing. I've enjoyed playing with them just as much as any other cricket I've played. So if I can contribute to the team's success, it really brings up exciting things like this tournament for us. And if we perform well, then there's more exciting things on the horizon for Singapore cricket.
Tim David there from Singapore cricket, who've been impressive during this tournament. It's been interesting, hasn't it, seeing some of the associate nations that we don't get to see that often.
It has, and there's been a lot of talk about the Nigerian team because they've come from nowhere to reach this tournament, and they've played some really good cricket. And sadly, Bermuda, who actually got past the USA. Yeah. They knocked the USA out to actually get to this World Cup qualifier, so they haven't had such a great tournament. But Singapore, it's going to be a huge match for them tonight against Namibia. As you say, they beat Scotland. They would have thought that was enough to make the next round, but now they have to beat Namibia tonight to go through. It's going to be a great game down there at the Dubai Cricket Stadium.
Bruni, really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much indeed for coming on to The Grill. I hope you've enjoyed your day of sports. It's been a significant one, hasn't it?
It has. Listen, I think this result today has really made the World Cup. It needed, I mean, we had the dreadful typhoons there, so we had a couple of games that were cancelled, and it kind of broke momentum in the tournament a little bit. We needed a really great match. The All Blacks just waltzed through today. It's just too commonplace. So a great result. It's really made this World Cup and a very, very special day of rugby union today.
Yeah, I know that I might not sound like a Scot, a bit of a fake Scot here over, but I do support Scotland through and through, but I can't help but have an eye on England, especially when they go deep into a tournament. And when my son was sat opposite to me today wearing his England top, it was a significant moment.
Yeah,
as well.
I'm going to oust you, Tom, and say that you did message saying a bit emotional.
Yeah, it was a
watching
bit emotional.
And I get it. I mean, I watched it. And again, anyone knows me, I am Scot through and through. I watched it. You got to doff your cap. Mark Archer did it very eloquently a little earlier. A proud Kiwi, of course. The better team. They put on a sporting clinic. And we sit in the game of sports. We marvel over sporting athletes, men and women and teams. Today, England have put on a rugby masterclass. They deserve all the credit that's coming their way.
And the thing is, at the absolute peak peak of the tournament, you need to be in your peak condition. You need to work 4 years to get that team right to be able to do that, and that is what Eddie Jones did. He had his big match players stand up on the big day and deliver. So again, all credit to him.
Bruni, thank you to you. Chris McCarthy, thank you to
Tom
you.
Thanks
to all of you for your thoughts and comments. All we need now is West Ham to win 10-0 to break some records. Don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. Do stay tuned. We've got cricket on as well. If you want to go out and watch some international cricket, get yourself down to the Dubai International Cricket Stadium. 7:30 start, Namibia against Singapore. Will be a cracker. Not sure how many they're going to get into the International Cricket Stadium, but I think we can all agree that it is a world-class stadium.
We are really delighted and excited to host such a huge tournament. It always helps us to have such world-class facilities, and that's the reason ICC World Cup qualifier is with us.
Stadium was inaugurated in April 2009, Pakistan and Australia, ODI, and since then the stadium has hosted some great international matches. This is 25,000 capacity. We have 41 hospitality suites. You will find an equally good experience wherever you sit in the stadium. The best part of the stadium is its ring of fire with 400 lights put on the roof structure. This is a totally towerless lighting structure. There is no player shadow on the pitch.
With an intense ICC tournament, our preparation goes into preparing a good T20 pitch, which is a fair bit of planning and keeping the moisture up in this climate. I guess for me, being head curator here at an international venue is my dream job. To be able to see the world's best cricketers on your surface is what it's all about.
We have seen over the years that interest-based cricket is continuously growing, and these events definitely keep you on the cricketing map and also help to maintain and grow the cricketing interest, especially among the youth.
It's fantastic for us to have our facilities used for world-class cricket for the ICC tournaments. So to be able to showcase our venue to the world again is what we're here for.
This is The Grill.
Join the conversation.
Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye app.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.